You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Tim McMaster, going around the American League East, looking back on the red-hot Blue Jays sweep of the Yankees. Are we getting a glimpse of the Red Sox outfield of the future? We'll also talk to Rays broadcaster Dwayne Statz about Kevin Kiermaier and company. Let's jump right in with the Jays.
Gregor, it's a good time to be in Toronto. It's a good time to be a baseball fan in Toronto. Heading into Wednesday, 9 straight wins for this team. I think when you draw up what you want to do at the trade deadline and what you want to become of it, this is pretty much the definition, isn't it? You make the big moves and then you get red hot.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really remarkable how much they were able to do before the deadline. I mean, this was a team that we've been talking about the offense all year. But outside of that, there was a lot of flaws on the roster, whether it was in the rotation, the bullpen. They had a lot of defensive issues in the field earlier this year. And Anthopoulos really knocked off each one of the things on his checklist. It was kind of amazing in a lot of ways that he was able to find a number one starter in David Price, was able to get a couple of bullpen guys in Mark Lowe and Troy Hawkins, and then Troy Tulowitzki at shortstop, defensive upgrade over Reyes, and then bringing in Ben Revere for left field. I mean, it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks for this team in this city, and I think, you know, you're finally seeing Blue Jays fever kind of explode, not only in Toronto, but also Canada as well. I mean, since the Tulowitzki trade, they've sold 300,000 tickets, and the viewership on TV during a recent series against New York was 1.4 million. These are the type of numbers that just hasn't been associated with the Blue Jays for an incredibly long time. And you can really go all the way back to it being 1993 when it happened to be the last time they also made the playoffs.
Was there a belief in Toronto, in Canada, maybe even thinking back to a few years ago when they had the huge offseason, that if this team could get on a run and be in contention late, that this is exactly what would happen, that it was a bit of a sleeping giant?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the exact kind of term that, you know, the VP business operations, Stephen Brooks, said. You know, that's what a lot of people, I think, have been waiting. And we've seen signs, you know, that baseball has been kind of ready to explode in this city. We saw it during that offseason going into 2013. There was an awful lot of there was an increase in season ticket sales. There was an increase in flex packs for their group of ticket sales. There was a real buzz around that team. But the thing with that 2013 version is that, you know, things really went off the rails a week or two into the season. I mean, it was a remarkable fall from grace from where, you know, they being crowned the winners of the offseason to then what ended up being the actual product on the field. Now we're seeing it actually happen in the middle of a season, in the middle of a pennant race. And last year, you know, the Jays were in sort of a similar situation, but they didn't do anything at the deadline. And so I think there was a lot of you know, pessimism going into this deadline that it might be a similar situation. And, you know, it obviously didn't turn out that way because not only were they able to make one move, but they made a series of major moves for this roster. And now I think you're seeing the fan base, the city and the country respond to that moves in record numbers.
I think the thought was they would definitely get themselves into the wild card race, but now they are nipping at the heels of the Yankees in the American League East. They sweep the Yanks in the Bronx last weekend, and I think the remarkable thing about that series, you think if they were going to sweep the Yankees in the Bronx, they would out-hit them, but it was tremendous pitching. Shutting out the Yankees in back-to-back games for the first time ever as far as the Blue Jays go. David Price, it seems like he's been everything they could have hoped as advertised, and maybe even better in his first couple starts with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, he really has, and he gives them that missing piece at the front end of the rotation that they really haven't had since Roy Halladay. And, you know, it's a luxury that every contending team would love to have, and certainly something that you kind of need to have if you end up in a playoff series, just to have that bona fide ace that you could turn to. And, you know, R.A. Dickey the last couple of years was kind of miscast in that role. He's having a, you know, he had a pretty strong 2014 season, even though he received his fair share of criticism. And, you know, he's really been on a strong run for a couple months. And having Price in that rotation allows him to slot back into that number two spot. And then you have two other guys in Mark Burley and Marco Estrada who are having very good years. And so, you know, the other thing that Price also does is he basically gives you a guaranteed spot in that rotation where you know the guy's going to eat up an awful lot of innings. And what that does is it has repercussions for the bullpen as well. They can shorten starts for guys like Estrada or Drew Hutchinson when necessary. Being able to go to that bullpen a little bit earlier, not worried so much about fatigue anymore, because you know that, you know, David Price is looming, and you can kind of plan for that in advance because, you know, he's going to get roughed up every now and then. But for the most part, you can, you know, put him down for a solid seven innings, if not more, pretty much every time out there.
How about that bullpen? Obviously, at the deadline, they also got Mark Lowe and LaTroy Hawkins. Aaron Sanchez now back there in that bullpen. This was a weakness, but now it feels like more of a strength.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, I was joking on Twitter last week that, you know, this doesn't even seem like the same team that I was covering about a week and a half ago. And I guess that's what happens when you turn over 20% of your roster. But the bullpen, to me, is probably the biggest, you know, the most noticeable difference on this team. And that's, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about Roberto Osuna as being really the only reliable guy down there. And the Jays had all kinds of issues closing out games, getting it to Osuna in the ninth inning, and then had even more difficulty on the days when Osuna wasn't available because he needed a day of rest. Now what you have is multiple late inning guys that you can go to. You've got Osuna down there. You know, Aaron Sanchez has settled in really nicely since coming off the DL into that eighth inning role. And then you combine those two with Mark Lowe, LaTroy Hawkins, and Brett Cecil really began to turn things around about a month ago. And so you can really go five deep, which is a luxury that a lot of teams don't necessarily have, but a lot of the good ones do. And it kind of, all of a sudden you can kind of match up with a team, you know, like the Royals, which is something that you wouldn't have been able to say, you know, a couple weeks ago. So the whole roster has really been transformed, and now, you know, that really does become a strength. To go along, and the team, they have the team to go along, you know, to accompany that league's best offense that we spent so much time talking about. The rest of the roster didn't match up with that originally, but now it does.
Brian, let's start with the slump, because seemingly came out of nowhere. This is a club that had scored 90 runs over 10 games, was really swinging the bat well, and then suddenly they can't hit the ball anywhere. They go to Toronto, they get shut out in back-to-back games. What exactly is going on with this lineup?
Yeah, it's a cold spell. I mean, I don't think you need an advanced degree in baseballology to tell that. But it's alarming. It's coming at a bad time for them. And I think it starts from the top. Jacoby Ellsbury hasn't been the same player since he came back from the DL. He's hitting under 200. And, you know, he really sets the tone for that lineup. You saw how good it could be in April and May when Ellsbury was really hot. He and Gardner together at the top of the order. They were on base a ton. Then Alex Rodriguez, Mark Teixeira driving the ball, Brian McCann. This lineup can produce runs. The talent is still there. We've seen it already. It was not a fluke that they put up those 90 runs in 10 games, but they're in a cold spell, and they're going to have to break out against it because they've got two more games here in Cleveland, and then guess what? You get the Blue Jays once again, and you know, the Blue Jays are surging. They're hot. They're high on their trade deadline acquisitions. I mean, it's exciting times up in Toronto. The Yankees are going to have to hold tight in this race and really try and keep pace.
I was going to say, they probably couldn't have picked a worse time to go into a funk like this, obviously getting swept in Toronto, and the Blue Jays have really closed that gap in the AL East. And I mean, it's not like they were shut down by slouches. David Price was tremendous for Toronto. But then they go to Cleveland. You thought maybe things would get going on Tuesday night. They showed some signs, but deep in those extra innings, you kept thinking inning after inning, this team's going to score a run. They end up losing in 16. How frustrating a game was that on Tuesday night?
Yeah, they were down in the clubhouse after the game. And it's always a gut punch when you have a game like that, especially when they got a lead for Andrew Miller, who's been lights out. He was 24 for 24, and you don't expect to see a BS next to his name, and there it was, blown save. That's the first one they've seen it, and hopefully they don't see it again. But that was going to happen. He wasn't going to be perfect completely. So I think, you know, you can put it on Miller, but really you got to look at the top five in the batting order for that game. They were a combined 1 for 30. Their only hit was Alex Rodriguez's single in the seventh inning. That's not going to do it. You're not going to win a whole lot of games when 1 through 5 in your order are going 1 for 30 in a 16-inning game. So, you know, as I said, they've done it before. These are the ebbs and flows that every team seems to go into. But, yeah, it's not coming at a great time for the Yankees. I don't expect that they're going to continue on that pace for the rest of the year and score, I think it's 8 runs in their last 60-something innings. I think they'll do better than that at some point, but – The truth usually lies somewhere in the middle. You never look as bad as you do when you're losing, and you never look as great as you do when you're winning. So they're somewhere in the middle of that, but there's a reason they're in first place. There's a reason they've been contending all season. But, you know, a few of the Yankees were saying last night, they're in a dogfight. They're going to fight to the finish here. They know Toronto's not going to go away. They've got to take care of business on their side.
Do you think at this point, now a few weeks after that trade deadline, there's some thoughts that maybe the Yankees could have done a little more considering how hot the Blue Jays are and what they did?
It wasn't for a lack of effort. You know, they had deals on the table that they could have made. I think it was a situation more where they were looking down the road and said, we don't want to part with a guy like Severino, who obviously has come up, and you see why. He's 21 years old. He's given them two pretty good starts. There's a lot more in the tank there. I think they're excited about what Severino can be, not just this year, but in the future. You've got Aaron Judge down at AAA, Greg Bird. These are guys they want to build around for the future. And so it's a tough balancing act to say, look, could they go out and get a guy who's perhaps an upgrade over Steven Drew? Yeah, a marginal upgrade for sure. Chase Utley's a guy. He cleared waivers. He's out there. I'm not convinced you look at Chase Utley's numbers. He's that much better than what Steven Drew is. So if you can get him for free and plug him in, that's fantastic. But if you have to give up any kind of talent, there's a cost associated with that. So I'd be hesitant for anything that had to mortgage the future for this year, considering, look, they are in first place. I know it doesn't look good right now, but they've looked good at times, and they've done it with guys like Steven Drew in the lineup. So not to pile on Drew, but I know he's a popular target for the fan base. I think that Brian Cashman's in a tough spot. He knows they've missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. They want to get back to the playoffs. It's almost a must that they must do it. They need to print some playoff tickets at Yankee Stadium. You don't want to do that and sacrifice your chances in 2016, 17, 18. And that's what they would have had to do to give up on a guy like Severino, Judge, Berg, Jorge Mateo. They did not want to part with those guys. They were asked for several times. Cashman even kind of backed off a little bit on Mateo down by July 31st, but ultimately they stood pat, and we'll see where that goes. I think there could be a possibility of an August waiver move, but, you know, those are hard to predict.
Ian, this week, I guess let's start in the bad news situation. Koji Uehara is on the DL for the rest of the year. Non-displaced distal radius fracture in his right wrist after he got hit in that wrist on Friday. What does this mean for Koji and the team right now, not having that closer the rest of the way?
Well, I mean, it'd be a much bigger deal if the team was in a pennant race, you know, but let's face it, they're playing for next year right now. But still, we saw it, you know, the first game without Koji, you know, last night in Miami, Tuesday night in Miami, they have a one-run lead, and Junichi Tozawa can't hold it. So the Red Sox bullpen was trying to patch it together even with Koji, so now without him, it's going to be really tough for them the rest of the year. And, you know, John Farrell hasn't really anointed a closer. He's going to kind of leave it open by committee for now and see if somebody wants to step up and take that. But, yeah, the loss of Koji hurts. Long term, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for a 40-year-old to be able to rest these last 6 weeks of the season and be fresher going into next year. So I think maybe down the line you might look at this injury as a silver lining.
I thought maybe Gene Machi would be the guy we saw in the ninth inning on Tuesday night. He pitched the eighth inning and then Tozawa in the ninth. It seems like Tozawa, as good as he has been with the Red Sox as a setup man, he's never been able to quite take over that closer role. Is it something about the way he pitches or his stuff?
I don't think it's the stuff. I think it's mentality. Look, I think a lot of guys who have closed before will tell you that, you know, everything changes in the ninth inning. This whole mindset is different. The whole feeling is different. The whole tension. And I don't think Junichi Tozawa, he doesn't have that closer, I'm fearless mentality. He's a guy who, you know, he can get in his head a little bit. And I just don't think that, you know, he's ever going to be a closer. He's probably always going to be a setup man unless he ever goes back to starting pitching. But I just don't think that he's a closer. Frankly, the Red Sox don't have a lot of guys on this roster right now who are closers. So, like I said, it could the ninth inning could be an adventure the rest of the way here.
As far as Koji goes, he's expected to make the full recovery. Obviously, it's not an injury that really impacts the throwing motion and that sort of thing. He has 1 year left on his contract with the Red Sox. Is there confidence in the organization that he's going to be once again a top-notch closer in 2016?
Yeah, a lot of confidence. I mean, Koji was kind of a big question mark going into the season. It's hard to remember now, but you know, he had a tough finish last year. He was tired, and you know, they shut him down for a while last September. But he had a really kind of lights out season this year, and it was a great sign. And I think that there's a lot of confidence in Koji going forward. Whether he's the closer or not, he probably will be. But whether he is or not, he'll be a key piece in that bullpen in 2016.
All right, let's move on to some brighter topics. And one thing that's been, I think, exciting for Red Sox fans to see over the last week or so is maybe the emergence of the outfield of the future when you look at what's been going on. Let's start with Jackie Bradley Jr. He's always had the glove, one of the best outfielders in the game, but the bat has been slow to come at the major league level. But boy, he's shown some flashes here in the last few games. Five RBIs on Sunday, another triple on Tuesday night. Do you get the feeling that maybe it's starting to click for JBJ at the plate?
It sure looks like it. I mean, Jackie Bradley, you look at his minor league numbers, and the guy has hit his whole career except for when he's been up in Boston. And, you know, I think that he's finally, he made some adjustments to his swing this year, and then he just didn't get much of a chance to play every day in Boston this season until Mookie Betts got that concussion a couple weeks ago. Now, you know, it took him a couple weeks to get into the rhythm, but now he's really just starting to hit the ball hard every time he's up, and obviously plays with great confidence out on defense. And Bradley's so good defensively that if he just hits 250, 260, he'd be a really useful guy to have on a team. So I think I'm seeing how John Farrell kind of finagles Jackie Bradley Jr. into his lineup the rest of the way. That's going to be one of the more interesting storylines in this Red Sox season. And a lot of people would like to see that Bradley, Betts, Ruznik, Castillo outfield. They really make things happen on defense.
Dwayne, thanks a lot for joining us, first of all.
Tim, it's always great to be with you and talk a little baseball. And in particular here, as we get, we're under the 50-game remaining mark, to see what the rest of this season can hold.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting run for this Rays team. They just keep hanging around and a good run lately. They take 2 of 3 from the Mets, and after beating the Braves on Tuesday night, they're back over the 500 mark. What's the mental state of this team right now? Is there some confidence in that clubhouse?
Well, I'll tell you, the makeup of this club is really interesting. I think they've had 17 rookies on this club this year. More than they've ever had before. So it's a mix of, the standby, Evan Longoria in the middle of the lineup, and then a lot of new faces here. And I think they really play this game day to day. There's not looking back to see where they've been, and there's not a lot of, I think, projecting into the future. I think they try to stay focused on the game they have in hand. And it's an interesting mindset. I think they still feel that they can make an impact and make a run at the postseason here.
How much credit do you give to Kevin Cash as far as, you mentioned it, all those rookies and how this team has kept kind of on track with everything?
You know, everybody's asked that question about Kevin Cash, I think, from the day they named him as the manager, because he'd never managed before. He was, as you know, the bullpen coach for a couple of years with Terry Francona in Cleveland, and a former catcher who, you know, had to battle his way through pro ball to get the big league time that he did. I think he's been pretty even keel. Every manager, regardless of the history of a team, whether they've won or whether they've lost, obviously is going to have challenges. He's had his, and I think he has – If you had to grade him out in his first year in the major leagues as a manager, I think you'd have to give him a lot of pluses. He's been very good here.
You mentioned all those young players, and one guy who's really become maybe a superstar for this team is Kevin Kiermaier. Injured the thumb over the weekend. He missed a game on Sunday. Then he comes back and hits the big home run on Tuesday night. It seems like he's always in the right spot at the right time, coming through with a big moment for this team.
Yeah, I describe him as a guy who excitement follows around. He's that sort of player, and he does that. He does it through talent, but he also does it through effort. I think he is as quick as any player I've ever seen out of the batter's box. It's almost as if he's at full acceleration a step or two steps out of the box. And about half of his doubles this year, he's got, I think, 20 doubles. And I think it'd be safe to say 10 of those have been leg hits where he's caught the opposition by surprise and has turned what for most hitters would be a single into a double. That's just the way he plays the game, and he carries that with him to the outfield as well. He is outstanding defensively without question.
Yeah, we're talking about that defense, and obviously there's all the new metrics in the game. One of those is defensive WAR, and he's at a 3.3 right now for defensive WAR, Duane, which is first in the league by a lot. Second place is Angelton Simmons with a 2.4, but he's basically on a historic pace as far as that goes, which is pretty impressive from a center fielder. But he has it all out there, doesn't he? He's got the speed to track it down, and we've seen that arm a few times on display as well.
Yeah, he has a great arm. That's one of the things. Well, you'll recall when no one had heard of Kevin Kiermaier and suddenly popped up in the postseason because they respected his defensive work first and foremost. And I think that really is the bedrock of his game. He has great range. He's not afraid. You know, they say that a ball hit directly to a center fielder on a line is maybe the toughest play because it's difficult to sometimes judge the depth perception on that. He attacks line drives that fall in front of most other outfielders. He has great range going back. He's not afraid to dive. In fact, I think he likes the physical contact when he does dive and winds up, you know, on the turf or the grass. And his arm, as you mentioned, is excellent. Earlier in the year, he had a little segment maybe of 2 weeks where it wasn't as accurate. And, you know, you start to take that for granted. He's been so accurate, and then you see a handful of throws that aren't exactly where they'd like to be. He corrected that in short order and has been, outstanding, again, in the assist department as well as running routes and creating some excitement. Fans love to see a dynamic player like that.
Brittany, tough day for the Orioles now, I guess, recovering from being no-hit on Wednesday. It's never good to be no-hit, but the Orioles seem to be in a spot right now with a surging Orioles team a surging Blue Jays team that this isn't an ideal time to see their bats go quiet. Is that fair to say?
Right. I think, obviously, no team likes being no-hit, but given what's going on, given that they're trying to really fight to make the postseason, and they ended up losing that series in Seattle, I think, probably stung more. You know, they weren't able to come out with a winning road trip, and really every win matters. It's going to be really tough to overtake the Blue Jays. They still feel like they're in the mix very much for that second wild card, so it'll be interesting. But, yes, this lineup has been erratic all season, but it really shown some encouraging signs earlier in that road trip, and obviously being no hits, not great. Hopefully they kind of take today as a day to reset. They've played really well at home, and they're about to open up a fairly long homestand here.
Matt Wieters did not play in that game on Wednesday after a mild hamstring strain on Tuesday, but good news, it sounds like he's going to be good in the long run. Do you expect him to be back in the lineup for the weekend?
Yeah, that's what they're aiming for, him returning to that lineup by tomorrow. Now, if it's still a little iffy, they could give him another day, but they're hopeful he'll be okay. Another guy to watch, of course, is shortstop J.J. Hardy, who's dealing with a little bit of a back issue. So the lineup tomorrow will have a little bit more of an emphasis on than usual, just seeing who's in it, seeing how everybody is. But the Orioles were really close to adding a catcher in Seattle for that final game, really close to recalling Steve Clevenger from AAA Norfolk. They just couldn't get him there in time. So I don't know if they're a little more concerned about Wieters or they just can't afford right now to be down guys. Steve Clevenger certainly has a very good bat, so maybe they were thinking he could help them a little bit offensively as well. But the Orioles are really just trying to get to September here, obviously, when they have the roster expansion, trying to keep everybody healthy. And as we touched on in the beginning of the podcast, I mean, it's a huge, huge time for them right now. They've got to stay in it.
Yeah, and sticking with that kind of injury theme, they get Chris Tillman back after he was out a little bit, and then he gets hit by a line drive off the bat of Robinson Cano out in Seattle. But even though he was short in that start because of being hit, at least it looks like he's not going to miss a start.
Right, yeah, so that's kind of the silver lining. But, yeah, I think they're just glad to be home, honestly. It felt like the road trip started really well, and they won 2 of 3 in Oakland, including kind of rallying to win the third game to come back and close that series. And then they go to Anaheim, and you know, they're just not able to get that momentum going. And, of course, you can make the argument that Anaheim is also fighting to be part of the postseason picture. But Seattle is a team that hasn't really played all that well. You know they have some good pitching, and of course, they have Nelson Cruz. But I think the Orioles expected to win that series and to still come out with a winning road trip. And to lose 2 of 3 there really hurts. And they just a lot of things went wrong for them there. The leaders, the Hardy, little flare-ups. You mentioned Tillman getting hit. And, you know, they think it's minor right now. But, again, I think it was kind of a West Coast win that they hope to forget.
One player that had a nice series out there in Seattle as far as from the home run production, Chris Davis hit his 30th home run on Monday. Then he comes right back, hits number 31 on Tuesday, a big one that tied that game. He's also got that awful mustache going on. But Chris Davis certainly looks closer right now to version 2013 than version 2014. What's he doing right at the plate?
Well, I think when he's locked in, he's a little bit more patient, and you're seeing that. He's hitting a lot of home runs deeper in the count. In Oakland, he hit one on a full count, the grand slam to help them win the series, and that's when Chris Davis is right. When he's not, when he's frustrated, he's swinging at a lot of bad pitches, he's striking out more, and he's obviously a strikeout guy. He's never going to be a guy that doesn't strike out. It's just part of his game, but he's been able to keep that in check, and I think when he's going well like this, he feels confident not hitting home runs. He's okay taking walks. He's okay lining a ball into right center field. And that's what you're seeing from Chris Davis. And, you know, it's funny, the mustache, I don't know if it's a part of this new thing he's got going, but very quietly for maybe the last month or so, he's been much, much better at the plate. And over the last 3 weeks, the home runs have really started to come. But I really think if you trace it back, even as far back as about a month, he was starting to piece together the RBI doubles and the really good at-bats and things that kind of lead to this stint. Now, Chris Davis has always been a really inconsistent and streaky guy. So I think if you're the Orioles, you're happy he's doing so well, but you got to hope that you can ride this out and that this can continue to keep going, because the unfortunate thing with him is at any moment it can stop and he can once again look like a guy that's never going to get another hit. So they've got to find a way for him to hang on to this as long as possible.
This has been MLB.com Extras looking inside the American League East. Tune in again next week.